Good day, everyone, and welcome to the National Immigration Forum call on the government shutdown. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star, then one on your telephone keypad. Today's conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Jacinta Ma, Director of Policy and Advocacy. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the National Immigration Forum press call with local leaders regarding the partial government shutdown. With the government shutdown in its third week, more people around the country are starting to feel its effects, from farmers to businesses to law enforcement. We're fortunate to have people with us on the call today who will speak to the local effects of the shutdown, as well as the need for solutions that provide smart border security and confidence for immigrants who have been contributing to our country. With us on the call today are four individuals representing a wide diversity of perspectives from very different states, which shows just how wide-ranging the impacts of the shutdown are. We have Fred Hall, the Northwest Iowa Extension Dairy Field Specialist with the Iowa State University Extension, which is located in Orange City, Iowa. He covers the northwest of Iowa. Dr. Thomas Smith, an economist at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Chief Todd Thomas, the police chief in Appleton, Wisconsin. And Armando Ibarra, the government affairs consultant with the Greater Miami and the Beaches Hotel Association in Florida. Fred, why don't you please go ahead?
Thank you. I believe the effects of the shutdown on animal agriculture include seven key points. One, key agricultural reports are not being given, they're being delayed. Two, H-2A visas are being delayed because there's nobody there to review the applications. Three, supply and price statistics are not being calculated or updated, and this adds to uncertainty in the markets. Four, Farm Service Agency offices are closed with producers potentially missing deadlines for programs. Five, while the market facilitation program payments will be made, loan checks will not be processed, and this puts producers in jeopardy of current loans. Six, signups for the dairy revenue program processing will be hindered until staff is back. And seven, farmers doing due diligence on new hires are hindered with no access to E-Verify. In the eight Northwest Iowa counties alone, 114 dairymen milk over 55,000 cows every day. According to information from Northwest Iowa Development, nearly 1,700 workers are employed in the dairy industry in that same area. The economic impact of immigrant labor on U.S. dairy farm study by Texas A&M researchers in 2017 showed just over half of U.S. dairy labor force is of immigrant origin, and while just over one-third of the farms have immigrant labor, those farms produce nearly 80% of the milk in the United States. Iowa has around 1,100 dairy farms and 15,300 direct jobs with an economic impact of $3.8 billion. Surveys of dairymen at recent programs find 75% of the dairies hire non-family employees, and of those, nearly 63% hire foreign-born labor. Overwhelmingly, 86% of those dairy farmers indicated that finding and hiring labor has become more difficult. To help understand the scope of labor on just those farms, we asked the number of non-family employees and their labor expenses. Those farms hired 45 employees with a total labor expense of over $1.6 million. That calculates to an average salary of $36,240. An immigration policy that allows foreign-born employees to remain long-term and develop the skills needed to work successfully with cattle is vital to farm success and vibrant rural communities. A solution is in the best interest of all Americans. For animal agriculture, that solution has to include long-term visas, or some attainable permanent status that makes foreign-born employees legally available for jobs. Whether you believe the such shutdown is bad policy or a means to an end, animal agriculture needs an effective immigration policy. The current uncertainty is bad for the country and destabilizes a safe food supply. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Fred. And next, we will go to Dr. Thomas Smith, who's the economist at Emory University. Dr. Smith, go ahead.
Hello there. Yeah, I'm good. So I think that actually a lot of what the previous speaker said ties into our general fear about how the shutdown is impacting individuals and their ability to forecast what's going to happen in the future. I mean, the truth is that about 70% of our GDP comes from consumer spending. And the more uncertainty consumers are, the more fearful they are that they're not sure what's going to happen next, that can lead to a depression in spending, a depression in how they forecast their spending, and that can lead to feelings of less confidence and can create a very vicious feedback loop where we have a recession starting to build, or the thought of a recession starting to build. The truth is we don't need too much of a shock in the system to actually create a recession. What we don't want to have is the fear of a recession actually cause the recession itself. So I'm not trying to ring, you know, a bell to say that this shutdown will absolutely lead to a recession. What I'm saying is that I'm fearful that a decrease in consumer spending could get people into a mood where they stop spending long term. And those could have very, very significant ripple effects in our economy. And we're already seeing a buildup of housing inventory. We're seeing the market, you know, fluctuating quite significantly, and this kind of uncertainty definitely will add to a narrative for, let's say, the average person on the street to start thinking about, you know, whether our economy has long-run legs. And so, my biggest fear is that this kind of shutdown, a continued shutdown, will lead to more fears about our economic strengths. And so I'm very happy to take any questions later regarding that train of thought.
Great, thank you so much. And next, our next speaker will be Chief Todd Thomas, who's the police chief in Appleton, Wisconsin. Go ahead, Chief Thomas.
Thank you, Jacinta. Let's talk briefly about the shutdown and some of the uncertainty and challenges that has caused us in law enforcement. I don't think our citizens have been truly informed enough about the impact that this has on them and some of the safety issues in our community. Local law enforcement, we rely a lot on federal partners and on federal funding for both programs and for equipment that we need. We've now been notified that is on hold. The specific example I could probably give you would be just to look back at the last shutdown that we had a little over a year ago. It took us about a year to finally recoup the funding that we lost during that brief shutdown. That was a year where we didn't have money to fund heroin and methamphetamine investigations, and also a year we didn't have money to provide some equipment for our officers. It's also extremely disappointing to me that some of my colleagues in law enforcement are still working and not getting paid. We are talking about a lot of federal law enforcement employees, our TSA agents, the workers in our prisons, Department of Homeland Security, FBI, and many others. Government workers, we don't get paid as well as those in the private sector. We choose to serve in these service professions over seeking much higher paying jobs and with benefits in the private sector. And most of the people in law enforcement that I know live paycheck to paycheck, and most of them have families. So it's disheartening to think about that those families and those employees who are serving and protecting, going out to work every day, still putting their lives on the line and not getting paid for it, while Congress is sitting back and truly not doing their job and getting paid. To me, that just shows a lack of responsible leadership. The shutdown eventually will start to shift some additional law enforcement duties and responsibilities onto your local law enforcement agencies. This is going to add more work to our plates, and I think every chief will probably tell you that our plates are already full. Regarding border security, I think we all can agree it's critical to have safe borders, and that's a good starting point. We know that solutions and compromise is usually somewhere in the middle. I think there are areas where compromises can be made that can strengthen our border points of entry, and there's common ground that we can find, but that's not going to happen as long as each side refuses to compromise. Discussions of border security, I think, also need to include ways for us to process those that are already here. The Dreamers, those with a temporary protected status, I think those are areas where we can find some bipartisan solutions.
Great. Thank you so much, Chief. And our last speaker before we open up to questions will be Armando Ibarra, the Government Affairs Consultant with the Greater Miami and the Beaches Hotel Association in Florida. Go ahead, Armando.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much. I represent the Greater Miami and the Beaches Hotel Association, and we're comprised of more than 700 hotels and tourism-related small businesses in Miami-Dade County. In Miami-Dade County alone, our tourism industry accounts for more than 140,000 high-paying, career-oriented jobs. Our Greater Miami economy depends in a large part on our legal immigrant workforce, including many temporary protected status recipients and DACA recipients. For example, in Florida, there are tens of thousands of people living and working legally under temporary protected status. In Miami alone, more than 16,000 from Haiti and 7,500 from Honduras. And so clearly they make up an important part of our regional workforce. Now, currently it's tourist season in Florida, and our tourism economy, hospitality industry needs economic certainty. We're concerned that the shutdown will depress or disrupt tourism at our national parks and elsewhere as people stay home amid the uncertainty. Greater Miami is nestled between two national parks, Biscayne National Park and Everglades National Park, which are two of the most important landmarks and destinations for visitors. So we encourage Congress and the President to work on reaching a quick solution that keeps our country secure and protects TPS and DACA recipients. They are an important part of our productive workforce, and we need them to continue contributing to our economy, as they've done legally for years and in some cases decades. So again, we encourage Congress and the President to work very hard to reach a quick solution to keep our country secure and protect TPS and DACA recipients. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much to all of you for sharing your views on how the shutdown is really causing a lot of uncertainty and negative impacts and the need to resolve the shutdown. If now we can ask Miranda if you could go ahead and prompt for questions.
Certainly. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. And we would ask that you limit yourself to one question at a time and to re-queue for follow-up questions. And once again, it is star, then 1 for questions today. And we'll pause momentarily to give everyone an opportunity to enter the queue.
Great. We're really hoping to see some traction on a compromise, and we're really glad that our speakers were able to join us today to talk about it as well. While we're waiting for speakers to queue, let me ask you, Armando, your Senator Rick Scott is going to be sworn in today at 4. What advice would you give him and other senators and members of Congress? What advice would you say to him to work on ending the shutdown?
Right. I think, the former governor, Senator Scott, when he was governor of Florida, always emphasized creating jobs. And, as many people are very aware, we have very low unemployment across the country. And so, if we don't protect these legal immigrants that are such an important part of our economic, workforce, then we're going to see greater challenges in filling needs and in growing our economy, because we won't have the workforce that we need. And so I think that, you know, leaders across the country that have put so much emphasis and prioritized creating jobs and economic opportunity, you know, must also realize that at this important time in our economy, we can't do things that are going to limit our economic growth, that are going to limit our economic work, you know, skilled workforce, and are going to, you know, make it impossible or difficult for businesses to fulfill their employment needs.
Great. Miranda, do we have any questions in the queue?
We do. We'll take our first question from Catherine Bracco with WBAY-TV. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Chief Thomas. This is Catherine Bracco with Channel 2. I'm wondering, what can the people in Appleton expect in terms of differences in police services? You know, when folks call 911, are we talking about delays, or are there going to be any, or are there, as of now, any day-to-day differences in police response because of the shutdown?
Hi, Catherine. There's not going to be an immediate, they're not going to notice an immediate change. What's going to happen with the cuts in funding and the ability of some of our federal partners not to be able to respond and work some of the task forces that we work with, they'll be, again, pulling back a little bit, and we won't have the funding we need for some of the equipment and some of the investigations. So the impact won't be an immediate impact that'll be noticed by someone that needs the police. Our services aren't going to change. If someone calls 911, it's going to be more of the long-term impact and the recovery from the shutdown. The longer the shutdown goes, the longer it's going to take us to recover from it.
And once again, it is star then one for questions today.
While we're waiting for to see if there's anybody else who's going to queue up, Dr. Smith, I just wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about impacts on, you know, either the Atlanta area or Georgia that could occur if the shutdown continues.
Well, I think most people are talking about, you see on the news, what, every couple hours is how many TSA workers are impacted by this. You know, we've got the country's busiest airport by several different measures. We've got one of the largest carriers, domestic and international carriers, that's housed right here in Atlanta. And so it's always a little scary to think about the fact that we have, you know, so many TSA agents and persons working for and around the airport who might not be able to, you know, pay their daily bills. And those kind of things can definitely permeate through the rest of the economy. And, you know, Atlanta is a great place for doing business. Georgia is a great place for doing business. What we don't need is any kind of hiccup in terms of our long-run trajectory. And, you know, these are the kind of things that can lead to people being depressed about their overall feeling of the economy. And truly, just for our TSA workers, not to mention one of our other guests mentioned that FBI workers and other persons in law enforcement, this is not just a fear about not having money. This is actually not having money. And so if you don't have funds, you can't make purchases. If you're not purchasing something, the person on the other end, whoever is selling those goods and services, they're not receiving their paychecks down the road. And so we tend not to think about the long-run implications of these things, but you know, if you've got TSA agents who aren't buying, you know, new car tires or who aren't being able to pay their rent, you've got, you know, you've got an apartment complex who isn't getting the money that might be needed to, you know, service the building for other occupants. I mean, it can become a very vicious cycle. And so I can't put any hard numbers on it because it's very, very difficult to accurately calculate the impact of not having wages for, let's say, 1,000 workers. But we know that for those workers, you know, the economic outlook is dire.
Great. Well, not great, but thank you for your response.
It's not. No, it's just, yeah, it's tragic. It's absolutely tragic.
Yeah, absolutely.
we tend to say, okay, this is a person who's, you know, here's somebody who's not, who doesn't have their salary. But I mean, the truth is that for each one of these families, you can only imagine that it, the stress level is getting to a point where they're not going to be able to know what happens next. I mean, I would be curious to know from Chief Thomas if he saw any turnover, any you know, what he suspects is going to be occurring as people can't pay their bills if they tend to leave these government jobs and go into the private sector, and then he's forced, or other persons in his position are forced, to find new workers, and how that relates to law enforcement.
Okay, well, why don't we put a hold on that, and let's just see if there are any additional folks in the queue.
Yes, we can take our next question from Peter Combs with ABC News Radio. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking my question. I wonder, the president has said that this could last for days, weeks, months, or years. And I wonder if it goes months or a year, how you would see your sector of the economy affected. And I wonder if each of our speakers might answer that.
Okay, great. Go ahead. Is there somebody who wants to start? Maybe we can start with you, Armando.
Sure. I mean, we're hoping that it will be resolved before then. I think that you know, both sides are negotiating in public, and so I think both sides are perhaps some cases you know, saying things for the cameras, and so we hope that it'll come to a quick resolution. I think that an ongoing government shutdown will have a very significant impact in South Florida. Not just in the tourism economy, but across the board, and as it will across the nation. And so we're hoping that in the next few days, if not, you know, if not weeks, that this issue can be resolved through the dialogue and negotiation between the two sides, and that you know, we hope that moving forward, we'll have you know, a more productive dynamic between leaders in the new Congress than we've seen previously.
Fred, would you like to take that as well?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Jacinta. You've got to understand that the dairy industry is a twice-a-day job. And as this extends out and affects the marketplace, it's not just maintaining labor and having labor, but we are on the tail of a four-year commodity crunch. So these producers are running out of equity to keep the dairies moving. Each cow in Iowa contributes over $23,000 to the economics of the state. So as those herds go away, there's a lot of dollars that go away with that. If we don't have the opportunity to have the statistical reports come back into the system, we're really going to see our marketplace fluctuate worse than it has been, because we're going to start looking at maybe not the most reliable pieces of information to change the clearing market in the industry. So it could actually force a lot of dairies out of business.
Chief Thomas, do you want to respond to that as well?
Yes, thank you, Jacinta. Like I mentioned earlier, I think the longer it goes on, whether it's weeks or months, it's going to be a lot harder, and it's going to take a lot longer for law enforcement, public safety to recover. Like was mentioned a little earlier, I think this does extend out several weeks, you're going to see a lot of those TSA agents and other people in federal law enforcement seeking employment elsewhere where they have more stability. It already is a challenge in law enforcement to recruit and retain quality employees. And it will be much harder for those federal agencies to try to retain quality individuals the longer this goes on. So I think as this drags out, I think we're all hopeful that it'll come to an end shortly, but I think we need to keep in mind that whether it's weeks or months, the crisis will grow the longer this goes on.
And Dr. Smith.
Yeah, so I think when I heard the president say that, it kind of reminded me of my four-year-old grandkid who threatens to hold his breath until he doesn't get a cookie, right? And so you're like, okay, go ahead, hold your breath, and then breathe. And so if the president really thinks that it's in good economic an idea to keep the government shut down for another couple of weeks or months, I mean, he's going to be shocked by the fact that, you know, a bunch of TSA agents are all of a sudden going to quit because they can't afford to live without a paycheck. And then how are you going to replace those workers? You can't put a job ad up and say, well, we're hiring TSA workers and the annual salary is, oh, by the way, I'm not going to pay you. And so now you're going to get, what, shutdowns at the airport? You're going to have one line that, you know, it's going to take you 4 hours in a queue to get, you know, through safety check. That would shut down, you know, international travel, domestic travel. That would basically put our economy at a grinding halt. And so as soon as he sees the first, or as soon as any of our politicians see the first set of retirements from the TSA agents, they're going to realize that it's a not sustainable position. And so I don't see this shutdown going years, and I can't even imagine it going months, because the economy would be crippled. And so I'm fearful that it might go a couple more weeks and it's going to have long-lasting economic effects. But I can't imagine it going months. That would be terrible.
Miranda, can we take the next question?
Certainly. We'll take our next question from Robert Jimison with Georgia Public Broadcasting. Please go ahead.
So this is a question for both Armando and Dr. Smith. So first, you know, state legislatures get ready to write their budgets all across the country. How do you think, you know, talking about the shutdown potentially going weeks, how will this impact how states will pass different budgets? And then for the two southern states, Georgia and Florida, you know, a lot of farmers, a lot of damaged areas from the hurricanes were waiting on funding relief. Is that funding, are those funds still coming, or is that being put on hold? And what are you guys seeing in your regions regarding hurricane relief?
Okay, let's start with the first question about state legislature budgets. We can start with you, Armando.
Sure. I mean, it's very unclear what we're going to see in the legislature this year in response to this. You know, presumably this shutdown will be resolved in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, and the legislature convenes in March. So the governor was getting sworn in today, for example, in Florida. So thus far, it's unclear if there will be a reaction from the state legislature. Here, the state legislature, both houses are controlled by Republicans, as is the governor's mansion. So there may be relatively, you know, less pressure to respond in a way that's adverse to the president and to the administration. You know, I think in the next month or so, depending on what happens with the shutdown, we'll see if the pressure materializes on the legislature to react to it, or if a resolution makes that unnecessary. So we'll see.
And I think the second part of the question was, what do you think will be the impact on disaster relief funding?
Well, I mean, I think anything that you know, could presumably slow, you know, funding for disaster relief will have an impact, in particular, you know, in the Panhandle, which was so you know, devastated by storms in the past year. You know, I think a lot of people are depending on the recovery moving along swiftly. So, you know, I think that our legislators locally in Florida will probably be considering that as they reach out to the administration and encourage them to move along with a resolution to this, because it has, you know, real world impact on the ground locally. And so I think that if there's a way that perhaps, you know, our local legislature might act, it might be more in a direct fashion, you know, as a voice that is advocating to the administration and communicating just how impactful the shutdown is on, for example, on recovery in the Panhandle.
And I think, Dr. Smith, the question was also directed, those two questions were also directed to you.
Yeah, I think in terms of the legislator and in terms of budgets, we'd have to wait and see how long the shutdown lasts for, if any agencies are impacted in a significantly negative way, to see if they change their current budget proposals. And so I could imagine that if it lasts much longer and they have to, they miss an opportunity for something and they need to, rebudget in order to catch up or what have you, then they might have to, you know, redo their budgets. That might be a very, very tricky process. I know in Georgia we've got a very, very specific timeline for when these things have to be done. And so I could also imagine that different agencies would sort of try to forecast or project how much they missed out on or how this shutdown impacted them and sort of be scrambling to come up with new numbers. And so I can imagine that could lead to all types of really, you know, kind of crazy last-minute scrambling type of outcomes. With respect to hurricane funding, it's not clear, at least not that I've heard, that any hurricane funding is tied up in this sort of the same agencies that have been shut down. I do know that it takes forever to get these funding dollars back to the communities. And so, I mean, it just doesn't help that for some of these agencies, money's not flowing in currently, even while they're waiting for other types of funds. And so you just don't need these kind of events piggybacking on top of each other, because it just makes things just that much more complicated.
Can we take the next question?
Certainly. We can take a follow-up question from Catherine Bracho. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Hall. This is Catherine Bracho from WBAY-TV in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We have many, many dairy farms here in Northeast Wisconsin, and I wonder if you could touch on again directly, more specifically, I should say, how it will impact dairy farms all over the country, the shutdown, in terms of the labor force getting employees in.
Well, you probably are very well aware that labor is one of the critical issues in dairy. You know, once you have a good employee, you want to keep them. And this uncertainty really makes keeping good employees even more of a challenge. It's not just about the number of dollars that is paid. It's about the culture of the community and how the employee, especially our Latino employees, feel comfortable in the communities. So having an immigration policy that lays pathways for a more permanent visa situation or some pathway to a permanent residency is vital. The American Dairy Coalition's worked on several versions. We just haven't got to that agreement. It's going to take some folks who are a long way away from the milk pit to understand our situation.
Operator, are there any additional questions?
It does not appear that we have any further questions at this time, but as a reminder, it is star, then one for any questions today.
Okay, well, if there are no further questions, then I just wanted to say again thank you to all of our speakers and for their sharing their insights with us today, and to the people who have joined this call. We really appreciate your time.